Okay, so our next talk is going to be Pat Patey, who's a colorectal surgeon from Memorial Sloan Kettering. He's going to talk to us about two topics. One is watch and wait for rectal cancer, where are we? And then he's going to talk about patient-derived organoids and response predictors in GI cancer. Thanks, Pat.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Hound, Dr. Bartlett. Pleasure to be here. How do I get my slides to come up? Let's see. I'm grateful to talk. Let's see, we're going to do the other one first.
Escape.
Go to the one above it. Okay. Oh, I can do it. All right. Thank you. I'm glad to talk about watch and wait for rectal cancer. I've been practicing it for 12 years and maybe a little bit of a biased presenter, but I think it's a timely topic to discuss. And I'll be talking about what is watch and wait, what are the oncologic outcomes, what's the current status in terms of is it a standard, an acceptable option, and where are we going? I have no disclosures. So there's even in the era of watch and wait, the central paradigm of rectal cancer treatment is surgery. We know that surgery needs to be well done to maximize the benefits of local control and survival. But I don't think there's anybody in this room who would volunteer for an operation for low rectal cancer. And I'm talking about low, the lower half of the rectum, say from 8 centimeters down, which are the watch and wait candidates. There's significant morbidity associated with surgery and quality of life issues that can be long lasting. And I know from my own practice that low rectal cancer is a different disease in that respect from higher rectal cancers, sigmoid cancers. It can affect your job, it can affect your marriage, it can affect your happiness. And I think we have to take it very seriously when we offer surgery for low rectal cancers. On top of that, many patients have to receive adjuvant therapy, which adds time and expense, but there is a silver lining in the cloud. We know patients who respond well to adjuvant therapy benefit. If they go to surgery, they get better resection margins, they have better sphincter opportunities for sphincter preservation, better local control, and in the responding patients, not the overall population, but the responding patients, better survival, and perhaps opportunities for avoidance of surgery altogether. And I'm just reminding you of some of the data put together retrospectively correlating response of the primary tumor to overall survival. When the tumor disappears to neoadjuvant therapy, that population has the highest cure rate, regardless of the stage they started. It is the most powerful prognostic factor in rectal cancer, a complete response to neoadjuvant therapy. Dr. Angelita Habergama was really the first to fully recognize this, the importance of this, and realize that many of these patients are cured by neoadjuvant therapy. And she, in 2004, published her first major paper on watch and wait, where she had accumulated 71 patients who she'd managed by observing their tumors, seeing that they disappeared, following them, not operating them up front. She had a little bit of a problematic one-year waiting period, which made some people not trust her data because that has some statistical problems. But nonetheless, these were patients managed with observation, and she compared them to patients who had resection and no cancer in the specimen and found, remarkably, the outcomes were very similar. There was no disease-free survival or overall survival difference. And this implies that there's no benefit to upfront surgery in patients who have a complete response. Quite a shocking conclusion. So jumping ahead, what really is watch and wait? Watch and wait is not just saying, well, I didn't operate on somebody, let's see how they did. Watch and wait is really a paradigm for treating rectal cancer in which you are giving neoadjuvant therapy the greatest chance to eradicate the tumor. And that involves, first of all, neoadjuvant therapy, which can be standard or can be extended by adding chemotherapy. And then there has the period of response assessment. Once treatment's finished, you have to give the cancer time to regress. We've learned this from studies going back to the 80s at Princess Margaret Hospital and on forward that it can take up to 6 months for a large tumor to fully regress. And there's biology supporting that about mitotic death. You cause genetic injury to the tumor, and only with continued growth do the cells die. Then you have to actually determine, is the cancer gone? And that's not as trivial as you might think. We'll talk about that. And finally, mandatory to watch and wait is you have to follow patients. If you don't follow patients, you're not going to get good results because there will always be, forever, a local relapse risk. And so what is a complete response? Basically, it's three things. You have to put your finger in. These are low tumors and feel nothing, no nodularity, no irregularity, no stricturing. You have to look in and find there's basically healthy-looking mucosa. There can be a scar. There can be a little bit of inflammation, but no ulceration and no major stenosis should be present, and no obvious visible tumor. And finally, on an MRI, which has become the imaging of choice, there should be no detectable tumor. What that really means, if you look at the lower left panel and the corresponding endoscopic image, rectal tumors tend to be visible on T2-weighted image. They're a gray blob in the wall of the rectum. And after complete response, what you're going to see in the majority of cases is a thin, dark scar. And that's the hypovascular scar tissue in the wall of the rectum. That's what a complete response looks like in the majority of patients. In addition, you have to talk to the patient. You have to get informed consent. This is shared decision making. You have to tell the patient it's not standard management. You got to tell them there's a risk the tumor could come back. If it does, you have to be watched for that. And if it does come back, you might need an APR with a colostomy. And I remind my patients every time, you might need an operation. You might need an operation, because one of the problems of watch and wait is the expectation of no operation. And there's also a small risk of compromising cure. The follow-up scheme is somewhat variable among different centers, but basically in the first 2 years, you have to watch closely with frequent examinations of the patients every 3 to 4 months, because that's the high-risk period for local regrowth, and less intensively at the 3 to 5 year interval, and most recommend continuing surveillance out to 10 years. The longest recorded time to local relapse was 7 years that I'm aware of. MRIs we usually get every 6 months for 2 years, and then every 6 to 12 months. What about the oncologic outcomes? Well, the most important thing to talk about is local relapse, because that's unique to watch and wait. The tumors can regrow. Here's an example of a man I took care of almost 10 years ago. He was in his early 80s at the time. He had heart disease. His tumor went away. I was delighted. I didn't have to operate on him. He was happy. He came in for a routine follow-up, and the tumor was back. And if you follow patients, they will not come in with symptoms. You will detect them and follow up in an asymptomatic form. This patient went on to have an LAR. He had a node-negative tumor, and he died of heart disease about 5 years later. There have been several meta-analyses looking at this issue of local regrowth. This is one of the larger ones, well done, published about a year ago in Lancet Gastroenterology, and it showed overall about a 16% local regrowth rate at 2 years. I think that's a little bit low. You can see there's variation in the number, but that's a good estimate. And 95% of these are regrowths within the wall of the rectum, detectable by finger exam or by endoscopy. It's rare for tumors to grow in the mesentery. There's an interesting biology behind that, but bottom line, lymph node metastases are small. Primary tumors are big. It's harder to kill a primary tumor. Here's our data for local regrowth. 113 patients, we had a 21% 5-year local relapse rate. Of those, nearly all got TME. I took out small regrowths by local excision in 2 patients. It's not easy to do local excision in a radiated rectum, but you can get away with it if you're careful and the tumors are small. All did well, except for 2 patients. There were 2 patients who actually were not salvaged by salvage surgery. One of them refused surgery. He was an older man, a diabetic in a wheelchair. He had a pretty good complete response. His tumor came back within 6 months. He refused surgery, had a local excision with a positive margin. It came back again. He had an APR, and he ended up dying of disease. He delayed his surgery for 6 months. The other one didn't come back for follow-up. He was told his tumor was gone. He didn't come back for a year. When he came back, he had a T3N positive tumor, and he ended up dying of disease. So compliance is essential. Patients have to come back and be checked. Here's a sort of a summary of watch and wait. I took there are many series out there. These are the sort of composite series where they gathered together small individual series and done a sort of a pooled analysis. And from my estimates, reading these articles carefully, I'll take you to the bottom line, which is a summary. There's many redundant patients in these various series. But roughly, these are about 1,300 roughly individual patients. The median follow-up is about 3 to 4 years, which is not long, but it's majority of events will happen in that time frame. Most of regrowths occur within 90% occur within 3 years. The local regrowth rate is in the range of 20 to 30%. The only real predictor of local regrowth is size of the tumor. Bigger tumors are harder to shrink. They leave more scar behind, they're harder to survey, and they're more likely to regrow, but not by a large amount, but larger tumors are more difficult. The overall pelvic relapse or failure rate is under 5%. and compliance and patient refusal are the big problems. Distant metastases are low but not insignificant, around 8% or so, and the overall survival numbers are good in the, for disease-free survival in the range of 88 to 95%. Now, here's a conclusion of one of the pooled analyses, and they also included PCR patients who had been resected and had no disease and compared them to watch and wait patients and concluded there was no oncologic difference in outcomes, none in recurrence, none in cancer-specific mortality, overall survival. I think that's probably true. The statistics say that, but that violates common sense, and I know that not to be true. All you have to do is look at large series, mature series like that from Brazil. Habergama Hirschi, about 3 years ago, reviewed a series of 90 patients who had achieved a clinical CR and looked what happened to them. Well, 7%, 28 of the 90, about 30% got local regrowth. And of those 28 patients, six of those had ultimate pelvic failure. All those patients died of cancer. That wouldn't have happened had they had an upfront resection. So their local regrowth is a threat to uncontrolled pelvic disease. And again, some of these patients refused surgery. Some had brachytherapy. So again, that's real life. But local regrowth is a threat. And you don't have local regrowth when you resect them up front, not for the patients with complete response. Let's look at the International Watch and Wait Database, which was published about 6 months ago, 880 patients. You can see excellent results, about a 25% local regrowth rate over 2 years, low rate of distant metastasis, disease-specific survival, 94% of patients are cured at last follow-up. However, let's look at the patients who get local regrowth and those who don't. If you don't get a local regrowth, your five-year disease-specific survival is 97%. Your distant metastasis rate is 5%. But if you get a local regrowth, 84% and 18%, very significantly different. Local regrowth is a threat to distant spread as well. Why? Probably because they're worse tumors biologically. Radiation resistance does correlate to some extent with biological aggressiveness and metastatic disease. So probably some of these were predetermined. But it remains to be proven that leaving unresected disease in the rectum for a year or two is not a danger to the patient for development of metastatic disease. So this is a new cautionary note in watch and wait. Are you harming patients who are going to get local recurrence, who are going to require an operation 18 months later for a relapsing tumor? Our data also shows similar. If you look at the top and focus on the patients who have, you look at the relapse patterns, those who have distant metastasis, there's 11 of them in our series that we've reviewed up to now. Eight of them had local regrowth. That's not a random association. That's very strong. If you look at it the other way, patients with no local regrowth only had 3% distant metastasis rate. Those with local regrowth had 36%, over tenfold difference. So local regrowth is a sign of aggressive disease and potential failure for watch and wait. Also, the literature supports that. Finally, to summarize for oncologic results, I'd say that local regrowths are the significant oncologic event. It occurs in 20-30% of patients, and salvage surgery is possible, but compliance is essential. Overall survival results are good. The patients who develop local regrowth have worse outcomes across the board. They end up having surgery. They don't get organ preservation. They can get pelvic failure. They can get some metastasis. And so, therefore, surgical salvage may not mitigate all the risks of local regrowth, and it also emphasizes that better patient selection makes sense. If we could eliminate the local regrowth patients, the results would be even better. So what's the current status of watch and wait? Here's some comments from the review articles, that many of which I showed the data, and basically what it says, well, the results are good, but there's no level one evidence. There is no randomized trial, and there never will be. Patients won't submit to randomization to have a colostomy or not. So all of them say uniformly, you know, the results are good, but insufficient evidence. We need long-term follow-up, not the standard of care, potential selection bias, what patients were put into these series. Do we know we're seeing the true denominator? And all of that is true. However, I can tell you in my own practice, watch and wait does work for the vast majority of patients. And I think with informed consent and careful selection and responsible patients, it is an acceptable option. The NCCN agrees with me. In August of this year, they came out with a statement in their locally advanced rectal cancer guidelines, in effect, that says a watch and wait non-operative managed approach may be considered in patients in experienced multidisciplinary teams with a careful discussion of the patient and his risk tolerance and the compliance. I agree with that statement. So why do we accept this somewhat maybe potentially risky procedure? Why? Well, the oncologic results are pretty darn good. We're talking about failure in a small number of patients, and the other side, the benefits are enormous. Think about it. No surgery, no hospitalization, no time off from work, no morbidity, no complications, no colostomy, et cetera, et cetera. You can see it's not a small decision for the patient. What about the future? What we need to do is start establishing watch and wait, I believe, as the preferred and standard treatment approach for low rectal cancer because it's a better way to cure rectal cancer. We should try to make this option work for everyone. And this is what we're doing in our phase 2 randomized trial of Memorial led by Julio Garcia Aguilar. You can't randomize to surgery and no surgery, but what you can do is randomize between two total neoadjuvant strategies, and you can build watch and wait into it. So this is a prospective watch and wait protocol, a phase 2 where we're trying to get every patient to watch and wait. And the overall aim of the study is to find out, is overall cure rates compromised compared to controls, and what is the success rate in rectal preservation? That's essentially the trial. It's reached accrual, but we're still accruing patients because their results have been promising. We're going to learn a lot from this trial, and the Alliance group is in debate about whether taking this trial in a very minimally modified fashion into a national study. And I think this will be a springboard to moving this toward standard of care. Thank you.